You're listening to Your Health, brought to you by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable fine dining on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall for over 20 years. MC will be right back after these messages.
Hey, welcome, welcome. You're listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And today we have Mike Clark and Leslie Jenkins from Planet Earth Diversified up in Standardville. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Awesome. Great. It's really glad that you're here. They're I really love their stuff, and they're doing a great job up there. Very conscientious about soil health and just overall nutritional profile of their products. And they'll be getting into that more. But right now we have a couple of headlines here. Gyms and healthier foods are coming to the airport. That's what they're saying. They're better for you foods like poke salad bowls and organics are starting to become mainstays at various airports across the country. Not only that, but they are setting up yoga and meditation rooms, are also making an appearance. Airports San Francisco, Chicago, and London are leading the way. Rome Fitness is putting gyms in at the airport. The idea of healthier eating and exercise is growing because of demand by the consumers due to the fact that they're more informed. Imagine that. I was told many years ago that in the free market, there's nothing more powerful than an informed consumer. And that's what we here on To Your Health are doing our best to do. You can download this and past shows at SeavillePodcast.com and click on WPVC and put To Your Health in the search bar. Next, we have the Pennsylvania Department of Education funds fresh local food initiatives in Bucks and Montgomery County schools. And that's pretty cool. They got four districts in the counties will be implementing farm-to-school activities to promote healthy eating and provide access to fresh local foods. Food justice, right? That's it. It's funded by the Pennsylvania Department of Education, and it's funded through the Farm-to-School Grant Program, which includes 30 districts. It's similar to our city schoolyard garden here in Charlottesville, because part of their mission is to teach students how eating real food provides good nutrition and encourages them to shop locally and eat healthily when they become adults. Which I think that you were saying something earlier, Leslie, that they found that they were better students, or how?
Well, just that children are much more likely to eat those healthy foods if they themselves are involved in growing it.
Exactly. So. Yeah, that's something. And we had City Schoolyard Garden here a couple of weeks back, and they were saying that exact thing. That is what they found with the students, and then once a student gets in there, grows food, eats that food, then they tell their friends, and the friends want to become involved. So it just catches on, and I'm sure you guys have seen that. People that have eaten your products, that maybe it's the first time that they're foray into organics or farming, and they become good customers. And if nothing else, you have somebody to talk to on City Market Days. You see that, right? Isn't it? At least for me, when I started eating this way, I just became more and more involved in it. And I also found out that it was very difficult to go back. I didn't even want to go back, but, have you've seen that?
Yeah, one of the things that we see is that people, in the modern lifestyle, everything is pretty much at your thumbs or a video screen.
Yeah.
Or a picture of something, not really the real stuff. And we don't wake up in the morning having to go milk the cows and collect the eggs before we go to work. And so when people come and work at the farm or they come and visit the farm, their perception of what it takes to produce that food changes. And their perception of control of insects or if there's a bug hole in something, it doesn't affect them so much anymore. I mean, we'll see little kids like, the aphid's kind of sweet, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But if you saw aphids in the lettuce in the grocery store, it would be an alarming situation.
Exactly. Something that they would have normally put back because it wasn't perfect.
Right.
And then they and on the farm, they say, oh, well, this doesn't matter.
So it really changes the whole life approach mm-hmm. of individuals, knowing how much it takes, that something might break and you better be able to fix it right now because the plants are going to die if you
yeah.
don't. And it changes, it takes us kind of back to those pioneering days where survival required some skill every day. It wasn't just, you know, sleeping on the bus on the way in and driving through when you were hungry.
Right, right. Wow. We're talking to Leslie Jenkins and Mike Clark from Planet Earth Diversified out in near Stanardsville. And this is WPVC. The show is called To Your Health, and it's at 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This program I was talking about before in Pennsylvania, it started 2 years ago, and they were actually using the food grown in the gardens to supplement the school lunches. They found that students were more willing to try something new if they grew it, right? And so that's pretty cool. And it was so successful that more schools were added. The Home and School Association's Planet Earth Subcommittee was the moving force behind the grant that got this whole thing started, which I found when I first read it, I went, Planet Earth? I know those guys. They're going to be on my show this week. So it was pretty cool. I also talked to somebody at Texas A&M, Marissa Albers. I saw an article. Actually, it was one of my headlines, which is hands-on farming practice available at student-run organic farms on the campus at Texas A&M. They call it the Howdy Farm, which is kind of funny. And it was established in 08. But it was a group of students in a vegetable crop science class, and they just wanted to learn more about what they were talking about in class, and they knew that they could learn more in a garden than they could in the classroom. If you're going to talk about crops, you know, vegetable crops, why not? So it works with the bioenvironmental science department, which is a combination of outdoor and greenhouse growing systems, which is what you guys have out there, isn't it?
That's right. So yeah, we have a number of things in front of us right here. Nobody can see that on the
radio. Yeah.
But we've got things that are grown hydroponically.
Right.
That never really saw soil except maybe a soil solution that we've created.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other things that are grown in the ground. We have, ginger and turmeric. We've got citrus. So we've really kind of achieved the Jeffersonian goal of producing citrus in a greenhouse.
Apropos to this area.
As he called the hothouse.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that was always his dream that he could never achieve, was to actually grow citrus. So we have mandarins, we've got kumquats. We've
the kumquats are delicious,
Thai limes,
by the way.
Ponderosa lemon. And so all of this stuff here, even a ripe papaya there, are grown in. We have six greenhouses and about 5 acres of intensive raised bed culture outside. And we grow maybe on 5 of 15 acres there. But we produce, I think, 6 different cycles of large-scale composting, about 30 tons at a time.
Oh, my.
So our soil system is based on raising those microbes.
Mm.
And even in our hydroponic system that you would think be a totally sterile soil system, within a few days of the seed sprouting in that system, we take that solution under the microscope, and it is teeming with life. So even in the inside greenhouses, we're really focused on that single-celled organism and the invertebrates and the microbes that are beneficial. So really, what we're learning today in science is that we really are just a teeming microbiome, and if that's not right, then we're not healthy. And the same thing is true for the plants.
Of course. Who knew? You guys. And unfortunately, it seems like we've gotten away from the agrarian society, as you were pointing out earlier, where you'd have to go, you know, feed the chickens, milk the cows, whatever, before you went to school. And so this is bringing us back to the soil, which is exactly where we're supposed to. John Whiteside from Wolf Creek Farm was talking about it's all about the soil. And that, when he raises cattle for beef, and they're standing on it, and they're absorbing that stuff, and they're drinking the water from the wells and the local streams. And you guys are taking care of the soil. Now, you mentioned you had about 15 acres, but only five planted at any one time. Is that, I've heard something about crop rotation and letting things go fallow to rebuild the soil. Is that what that's about?
There's crop rotation. There's also buffer zones. And you can't, one of the misconceptions sometimes we get to, especially with greenhouses and indoor growing, is that we can produce this huge quantity of food and not on so much land, maybe vertically, maybe in a factory, maybe in a high rise, and it kind of devalues that cropland. And we really only survive on this thin crust on the earth. And if we don't take care of it, if we pave over it, if we think it's not important and every grocery store can grow everything they need on the rooftop, we lose value of the land. And the land is probably the most expensive thing for the farmer. And it's very expensive for him to not mine the land, but to improve it. So our soil is very different than when we started growing in this particular place in 1984, when we bought the first parcel of land.
Right.
But it has been very difficult to expand because the value of a housing lot is 1,000 times what we can recover in growing a crop.
Right.
So we've put a lot of area around us to buffer us from those things. We have to have large buffers around our compost area, so runoff and that sort of stuff is not an issue. Agriculture often gets a really bad rap that all the pollution comes from agricultural
farm runoff. That's what we hear, right?
And there may be something to that in these large monocrop areas where there aren't the buffers and the riparian zones around streams and that sort of stuff. But our concern is much more from upstream pollution, from the numerous septic fields and construction of new homes upstream from us. And we are actually mandated by the FDA to assess that water quality that's coming to us. And if any of that water floods our crops, we're not allowed to sell it. And so we're not the point of or point source of pollution. The pollution that might contaminate our crops actually comes from outside of us, from more modern developments.
And those are your crops, but a factory farm runoff using Roundup and all sorts of herbicides and, well, that is an herbicide, but pesticides and whatnot with, you know, loaded with phosphoric fertilizers, you know, phosphorus fertilizers full of cadmium 6, you know, it's like, oh boy, you know. But that runoff would definitely pollute the
The fertilizer with the high nutrients.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's why we only grow on a small portion of what we have.
Exactly.
Makes
sense.
We're trying to contain. Very interesting. In 2002, we won an award from the governor for Clean Water Farm because we collected all of our agricultural runoff. We built 3 constructed wetland ponds. We recycled all of that through these ponds, collected, filtered it, and ozonated it, and then reused it as irrigation water.
Oh, my.
We got this award from NRCS. DEQ was kind of interested, and they were very polite, and they said, it's really great what you're doing. Please don't ever talk to us about it again, or we will have to regulate you, and you will have to have an on-site wastewater permit and a license, and it will cost you at least $1,100 just to speak to us again. So please do what you're doing, but don't tell us. And then, to our surprise, our organic certification came and said, every place you've used that, you have to decertify.
Oh, my goodness.
That is wastewater, and you're not allowed to use wastewater.
Well, it started out that way, but you guys...
So it's reclaimed runoff from our own crops.
Oh, so that wasn't really wastewater.
Managed with, well, you wouldn't think so, managed with aerobic and anaerobic bacteria in these ponds, and then sanitized with ozone, which we had to build a whole recirculating tank and ozone. We got buildings to do all this. But that created this technical glitch in the regulation. So even though, instead of buying new fertilizer, we were reclaiming lost nutrients from other crops, it was considered a prohibited practice.
Oh my.
And at that point, we said, something's wrong. If we're doing the right stuff, and we're really protecting the environment, and we're really growing good things, but it can't hold the organic label. What does that mean? And I think we've had some discussions about this too. What does a consumer use as that term?
Right.
What they buy that they know it's good. And we thought in 1990 when we had the Virginia Organic Food Act, and I actually had a consulting contract to write the manual for Virginia, and the VABF got together and we formed a committee and we did a voluntary certification of all the Virginia growers that wanted to be certified organic under the 1990 Virginia Organic Food Act. And we were all biodynamic people. So we were all based on soil health.
Yeah.
We were really focused on that. And then we watched as the USDA said, you know, this is just a marketing term, guys. This is not a technique as much as a marketing term. And we thought, oh, that's just baloney. We're the only ones that are going to be able to do a good job on this. Within 2 years, product was coming from Israel. 5,000 pounds of organic coffee beans were loaded in Colombia, and 50,000 pounds were unloaded in New York. And we realized that it was a marketing term and that it was more likely to trick people than guarantee people they'd get what they think is grown by small
labs. There you go. That's what we want. Let's trick us all. You're listening to Your Health here on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville Resistance Radio. We're talking with Leslie Jenkins and Mike Clark from Planet Earth Diversified. I have a container here of some of your pesto, and I think, weren't you pretty much involved in that, Leslie, with the pesto kitchen or something? I saw your name on something at one point. Leslie's, preserves. Wasn't it preserves you were doing?
You're talking about the, like, rose jam?
Yeah. Weren't you doing that, kind of really involved in that, or am I off base?
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, it just came from a desire to expand people's experience of the herbs and fruits and vegetables mm-hmm. that we grow. And people would say, oh, well, what do I do with this rose geranium or this Thai basil? And the way that I cook, I just go see what I have and what flavors I think might marry together well and then make that. So, like, and I think my involvement comes most strongly in that I helped build that kitchen, you know.
And right.
So, you know, and it's inspected, certified, et cetera. But I don't think people give Mike enough credit for his ingenuity mm-hmm. in the kitchen, his creativity. That the pesto is his baby.
Ah,
and,
okay.
Like, one of the jams that we made, we would do a candied lemon with Thai basil flowers. Mike's idea.
Yeah.
And so the rose jam came from discovering this old recipe. It was a Russian recipe for rose petal jam. And I worked with that for a while, and I really liked it. But the petals kind of were weird, scooping them out of the jar and whatnot. But I found that the rose geranium actually contains more of the essence of rose than the actual rose does itself, so it goes a long way and can certainly flavor a jam without you having to, like, dig through these kind of wilted, folded over petals.
Petals, yeah.
So it's all about experimentation and what tastes good being able to use some of the freshest, most nutritious ingredients on the planet. So,
well, I know I was up there when we were getting those chili peppers that had gotten hit by the frost earlier this year, and we picked those, and Mike was roasting them and then putting them through a mill that would squeeze all the seeds out and just give you this pesto. And it was, I don't know, one of the most delicious things I ever tasted in my life. It was just absolutely fabulous. We're going to take a little break here, and we will be back. This is MC Blair. You're listening to Your Health. We're back. This is MC Blair. We're talking to Your Health on 94.7 WPBC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking to Mike Clark and Leslie Jenkins of Planet Earth Diversified. And when we backed off, we were talking about pestos and paste and everything, and we had mentioned the roasted pepper paste, which is, I guess I'll let Mike talk about it, because it sort of takes in everything that's good about the farm and puts it in one container. You know? So how did that even come about?
Well, one of the things we try to do is really we want to get the most use out of everything. So any trimmings, any plants that we don't find the sufficient quality to sell, we will make into another product or feed to our chickens or to the animals. So what you find with a roasted pepper is people, they don't know what to do with peppers. We grow thousands of pounds of peppers. We haul them to the market every week, and there's so many people are looking at them going, I don't know what to do with all these peppers. They'll buy one or two. So 90% of what we bring to the market, we bring back home. We started roasting the peppers right there at the market, and people can smell it blocks away. And if there's anybody that's anywhere from the Southwest, they follow their nose right to those roasted peppers. So now people know what to do with the roasted peppers. Mm-hmm. So we took it a little step further where we clean them up for them, put a pound package in a frozen container, and now you've got something that's got some really, you know, years of shelf life. And you can scoop out what you need as you want it and refreeze it. But it's a real important concept of our holistic, just like our wastewater recycling systems, was to take everything that's produced at the farm and use all of it. And so the pesto leaves that aren't pretty enough to go as garnish on the plate will go into a pesto. And we make all of these different products on the farm. So it's really a true local source. Some of the things, you know, salt and sugar and some components may come from off the farm. But it really is what we're shooting for, is to do everything we can locally. The only thing we could go further is if we had a restaurant on the farm and you could actually eat the food there.
Right.
But we do a CSA, so we have people that subscribe to that. And once a week they get a big box of food. Most of them say they get too much food, which confuses us terribly because we've given you more than you paid for, but you don't like it. And you want to cancel because you're getting too much food.
You didn't like that bonus, huh?
Well, people are afraid of waste.
Right.
And, you know, I love NPR, but they have really convinced people that there's this huge food waste problem. And so people are actually afraid to buy some lettuce and take it home because they might not eat it. Mm. Or they might, this big box of watercress, you know, you buy that and I'm going to eat some of it, but I'm not going to eat all of it. It's going to go to waste. I shouldn't do it. I should just drive through and get something to eat, and then I don't waste it. And so it creates this conflict. And most of us don't have a lot of time. But there are ways to reuse things, and making pesto is not that difficult. You can always take your leftover greens and turn it into pesto. So we really want to kind of promote that, is saving local food systems depends on supporting those local farmers.
That's true.
So don't be afraid to buy their product when they have it, because they only have it for the day they're showing it to you.
Right.
They don't have it in a warehouse that they just pull out. It's not. Now, we've made some frozen products out of that stuff, trying to help that process along. But find a way to use it. Find a way to be creative and not be intimidated that I can only eat this box of watercress as fresh watercress. I can't do other things with it. Mm-hmm. We have no problem. When we have a meal, we'll put several boxes of our food in it. You have spaghetti, you just put some greens on the plate, pour the hot spaghetti on it and the sauce, and you know, you've got your salad greens there being braised on the plate by the pasta. So there are a lot of ways to do that and achieve that lack of food waste. So everything that you see here on the table is stuff that we grow fresh, and sometimes we turn into products. Sometimes we package it in a special way so that it has a long shelf life. But it's really, we're trying to help people understand how reducing food waste doesn't mean not buying too much from your local grower. Because that local grower, really, he can't survive unless you buy all the lettuce he grows. And it's still going to, quote, waste if he takes it home from the market because he didn't sell it at the market.
Right.
So what's he going to do with it?
Compost.
Well, that's right.
And compost, feed the chickens, exactly. Yeah, give
or
them some beta carotene.
Or we roast the peppers. And the day you came out to the farm, we'd had a frost. And we had several tons of peppers that had to be used that day. And, you know, it was, and I wish we could have had more people. I wish we could have brought our whole CSA crew out, had 100 people roasting peppers and taking them home. But we saved, you know, hundreds of pounds. And you took a bunch home with you.
I did.
And I'm sure you had plenty of time to roast every one of them afterwards. It's hard. The modern life is pretty busy. And we really are only allocated a few minutes to feed ourselves and not a whole lot of time to prepare it. And so we have to kind of work with that.
Well, that's it. And then, you guys out there listening, you can go to Planet Earth. You can how would they get you, say, email or?
Yeah, they go to our website. We've got a special .planetearthdiversified.com website that is the description of the CSA and what's there and several years of recipes and everything that people have gotten. Our products are available at Wegmans, Foods of All Nations, IY, Rebecca's. What was Relay Foods is now Door to Door Organics. And so there are a number of venues, and they can buy directly from us, too, and at the markets.
And at the City Market, April through December, so right in Charlottesville as well. So, all this, what we've been talking about, it sounds very much like biodynamics, where using everything, it's about the soil, and of course, the problem with factory farms is that they'll grow things and just deplete the soil, and then try to make up for it with chemical fertilizers that are supposed to. And so now you'll have products, I assume, that will grow, or lettuce, we'll just say lettuces, that will grow up, and they'll look great, but because the soil was depleted, that's just some green leaves that's probably not have a lot of fiber.
Yeah,
but that's about it.
It gets back to those microbes.
The microbes, right? Exactly.
If you're not feeding the soil, and the whole, we come from that biodynamic background. The VABF, a Virginia Association of Biological Farmers, was sort of the spearhead of getting the organic certification in Virginia back in 1990. Now, that. The biodynamic has a lot of different aspects. There are spiritual aspects.
Right.
There are astrological.
Well, it was started by a philosopher in 1924, Steiner.
Yeah. And so that's, that was there's a lot to that. And I think most of the local farms you bring in here, I know next week when you bring in Free Union Grass, there is a spiritual aspect. And what Gail Hobbs Page does.
Right, down at Chairmont Farm.
We've supplied her as a chef for many years. And she started to farm on it. And that was a choice, a spiritual life choice to do that. And John Whiteside, you talk to these people, they are not maximizing profit. They could make money doing anything else better than what they chose to do. They made a life choice to dedicate themselves to a quality pursuit. And that is the main difference that you're saying. The factory farm exists to pay the stockholders, to pay the investors, and it is their obligation to maximize the bottom line. And so mining the soil is always going to maximize the bottom line better than that farm leaving the soil more enriched and healthier than when they started. So there is the conflict. And this is a choice that most of your local growers are going to make, that they're not doing it to get rich. In fact, if you're not rich before you start, you're probably not going to succeed.
No.
And John will tell you, you will never recapitalize.
Right.
You have to start with all the capital you need, and the more you have, the better, because then you can do it right from the start. And, we discovered that very early on. I mean, I retired very early from my engineering career, cashed in all my money, and within 9 months it was gone. And from that point, it's like, well, I got to borrow money to build my next capital investment. And from that point, you just start, the hole gets deeper and you just keep digging. So it's very difficult to say that that the small growers are going to, without lots of support, and that support mainly comes to the consumer saying, I'm going to choose to do this to keep these people doing it. If they start looking at the tomatoes or this product and going, hey, and we have this, it's funny, at the Forest Lakes Market, we have it more than any other, because I guess there are a couple of grocery stores right across the street, and they all go, well, it's their three for a dollar across the street. Why aren't yours cheaper?
Yeah.
And you don't have the big store. You don't have to pay for the parking lot. Yeah. And there is an economy of scale, but the main thing is this sort of biodynamic life choice that you've made to work a system that's very intricate, and you're intending for the soil you leave behind when you're done to be healthier and the ecosystem to be healthier.
Yeah, that's that they say it's it was envisioned not only to produce ample food and fiber, but also nourish the people who depended on it by coming up with regenerative gardens and farms that just keep going. That's sustainability. It just regenerates itself by, as you said, you know, crop rotation, and then you put in the, where is it on the soil? It's a triple bottom line approach: ecological, social, and economic sustainability, food justice, food security. And you would use your fertilizers, fermented herbs, minerals, and manure. And that would enhance the health of the compost, the soil, and the food.
That's right.
So you guys do that.
That's right. But there's a big social problem. If we cannot take our next generation and say, farm, and you'll be able to feed yourselves and put your kids through school and have something to retire on, how can we recommend that they do that? And right now, being a local farmer means, as we just described, you had to start with enough capital to do it. And all you're trying to do is not lose all that capital and maintain. But at the end of the day, when you're dead and gone, that piece of land that you've made beautiful is still going to be more valuable as a shopping center or a house.
Right. And then, but what about with the city schoolyard garden, the farm to school programs that I referenced earlier that are all over the country now? Those students are more likely, I would assume, to maybe take over one of those farms, local farms in the area. I don't know. I'm just saying.
They would have to have the capital to do that. Our society does not really support in a way. And when we do support it, for some reason, we get all upset about it. The EBT program, which is sort of a redistribution for people that can't afford to feed themselves to get good food, we somehow think that's a waste and needs to be cut. And all of the farm subsidies get all of this bad press, like this is all horrible stuff. And it seems like it's not happening right. But the whole reason the USDA has these grants, that it's given a $1 million grant to help people pay for their certification.
Right.
Well now, that's an interesting...
To transition.
That's
also
an interesting,
right,
nice thing to have happen. But that $1 million never needed to be spent until you made a law that said you can't say it's organic unless you meet this regulation.
Right.
That $1 million would have been better spent helping them make compost and not giving them tiresome regulation.
Yeah.
And Thursday, we're having our annual food safety training with the FDA, and I'm always the problem child in these events, because I'm like, wait a minute, we're spraying manure tea, compost tea, on our plants to create a diverse microbial environment that protects those plants, protects them from taking up E. coli splashing from the soil, and makes them healthier. And you've just created a regulation that says, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So you're forcing us on the social aspect of food safety, that it would be better that we put chemicals instead of microbes on our food because we're so afraid of getting sick.
Oh, boy.
So there's some really big things that have unintended consequences that may not be obvious. And when you see great hydroponic systems in cities that are feeding people, there's some unpaid costs there. But the biggest unpaid cost that I'm trying to express is the devaluation of that land. And if I can't leave a system behind that makes enough money that my children can continue to farm, then my farm will probably be sold and subdivided and developed. And that our economy thrives on. But you don't see many people taking lots and putting them back together as a farm and saying, no, we're just going to have some dairy cows or some grass-fed beef, and you're never going to build a house there.
Right.
They're always doing that, borrowing money from the bank, and the bank knows that when you get tired of farming, we can make a lot of money building houses.
Mm. And then what are those people going to eat? They stole paradise and put up a parking lot. Yep. You know, that was a prophetic song, you know, means more today than it did then. We talked about the biodynamic guy. You know, my wife and I were talking the other day, and we were saying, well, what term can somebody use? And I have a feeling that it's not just one term. I think it's all about knowing your farmer, knowing the farms, knowing the area, and really doing your research. And a little bit later, I'm going to talk to you about a place that you can go, a website you can go to, and they've already done a lot of the research to help you guys make informed and healthy choices about what you eat. We're talking to Mike Clark and Leslie Jenkins of Planet Earth Diversified here on To Your Health. Take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about their wonderful products. We are back here at To Your Health. This is MC Blair. We're talking with Mike Clark and Leslie Jenkins of Planet Earth Diversified up in Standardsville. You can get their products at the City Market, IY, Foods of All Nations, Rebecca's, and on their website. And what is the website there?
PlanetEarthDiversified.com.
PlanetEarthDiversified.com.
And Mike, one thing we have achieved is we do supply to the big distributors. So we make deliveries to the Cisco warehouse in Harrisonburg.
Mm-hmm.
We've achieved the dream that Joel Salatin always says, if I could only get my chickens in Cisco, then we've actually done it. But the boxes you see right here in front of you can be ordered from the industrial complex of Cisco Food System.
I'll be darned.
So it takes a lot to do that.
Yeah, I imagine.
You've got a lot of regulations. You got to have a lot of insurance. You got to jump through a lot of hoops. But they are trying. But believe me, when we drive up in our little tiny truck next to all those tractor trailers,
yeah,
and we unload our single pallet among several hundred pallets, it's a drop, but we're there.
But it's there.
And
exactly.
So if you're a restaurant anywhere in Virginia, you can order our product through on your normal Cisco delivery.
So, folks, if you're a constant or a good patron of a restaurant, and you are concerned about getting healthy food in your body, tell them they can order Planet Earth through Cisco or U.S. Food, just Cisco, right?
Just Cisco.
And I know I see their trucks there all the time, so I know there are a lot of restaurants that use them. So there you go. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think one of the big things for us is we've been doing it since 75.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we sold to Integral Yoga when it had a dirt floor on Main Street.
And was a co-op.
Yes.
Right.
And before the Lotus was built,
mm-hmm,
in Yogaville. So we've been doing it for a long time. And you'll see that most farming businesses kind of come and go within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the time it takes to realize that, oh, the first year, the pests and diseases and animals don't know I exist, so I get a easy crop. The next year, it gets a little harder. And then building that soil gets a little more difficult. And then usually by 5 years, some accountant has told them, you're in trouble.
Right.
And so it's rare to see even though there's some wonderful, great energy, positive about, I want to do this, that something actually survives a five-year cycle. What we have found is if we have a new idea, we figure it's going to take us 10 years to even really make it happen.
Just from idea to fruition.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And then to make it consistent and stable.
Right.
But yeah, so having done it for 42 years, that's one of the reasons we're able to get in to places like Cisco and Bookman's, is we are consistent. We're there. It's not just the hottest new idea. And there are a lot of hot new ideas on the TV and magazines, and they all look great, and they look like they're going to feed the world. But unless they've been doing it more than that five-year cycle, they haven't really discovered. Things haven't broken yet.
Mm-hmm.
Before I came in to speak to you today, I had to fix two heaters in the greenhouse.
Oh, my gosh.
Before we could finish our delivery last night, our refrigerated van broke down. We were an hour late, but I had all the refrigeration equipment and spare parts and the skills and ability to repair a refrigerated truck.
That you built.
Yeah. I mean, I was yelling at Leslie, unload it all, get it back to the cooler,
right,
get it
right.
fixed. But we pulled it off and still made the delivery. And everybody's like a little irritated, why are you so late? But if we were a traditional business, we would have had to call a repair or rent another vehicle. It had been a day late.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing you were talking about with the skills of the kids learning to grow food. As we get back to that pioneering mentality where everybody in the family knows where the safe drinking water is, knows how to keep the crops alive, knows how to keep the animals where they need to be, we've lost a lot of that.
Yes.
There are not many people that want to have to invest in the tools and know how to fix their refrigerated vehicle. Their air conditioner breaks, they want to dial a number.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have to bust their knuckles and get in there and figure it out. But it takes a lot of troubleshooting.
Right.
And it takes a lot of life skills to know all those things. Those are powerful things for all of our kids, whether
right.
they design iPhones or hydroponic systems or grow grass-fed beef farms. They need that experience, and we've kind of lost that. And I'm happy to see anything that brings that kind of really hands-on troubleshooting and learning life skills to kids. And if it's farming or if it's learning that your waste products can be turned into compost and put back into the environment, or that all of our sewage is really nutrients that's being wasted down the river and ought to be reused, those things are powerful skills for kids to learn.
Yeah. Well, that's what all these farm-to-school programs are doing. And I know that we're trying to get the university more involved, although they are. UVA has got a wonderful sustainability initiative and food summit out there, and they're working very, very hard to get this information to the students and ultimately to the community. Leslie, what's life like there out at Planet Earth for you? You know,
busy.
It's busy.
Beautiful.
Right. Yeah.
It's good work.
Good work.
Yes.
Awesome. Now, I know you guys make all your own biofuel for your vehicles. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've ruined two truck engines, almost ruined a tractor. I nearly was hospitalized from blowing up my biodiesel manufacturing stuff. And then, so we collect vegetable oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone through collecting vegetable oil for many, many years. And then we process it with sodium methoxide, and we make it into biodiesel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult process to really do well. And unfortunately, it costs twice as much as going and buying regular diesel fuel. So we don't do as much as we used to,
mm-hmm.
especially after we ruined a couple of truck engines.
Right.
Because if you don't get it completely, all of the sugars out of that oil, the triglycerides,
yeah.
it burns and it makes like a hard graphite substance in there. But we can make electricity from vegetable oil, so we can make 20 kilowatts of three-phase power from waste oil and vegetable oil.
Nice.
And we run that using some old technology, some mm-hmm. you know, 1950s Detroit diesel technology. And we also heat all of our greenhouses with recycled motor oil. So we go around and collect motor oil. We have some special, very expensive furnaces that burn multi-fuel oils, the two that I had to work on this morning. They are constant maintenance. They're a real headache. You've got to know how to use them. You're going to get oily and greasy doing that. It's still cheaper to buy fuel oil.
Oh, right, of course.
So the fact that we do this recycling is because of our investment and our desire to do the things. It doesn't really pay. Bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
This is the difficulty we were talking about, the untold costs.
Right.
Some people say that farming gets more subsidies than anything else. It's really the petroleum industry that gets more subsidies and tax breaks.
Yes, they do. It's true.
And so they're not paying the full environmental cost. So when we make these sort of social mistakes of saying, oh, all this agricultural runoff is most of the pollution in the rivers, and these subsidies for the farms are ridiculous wastes of money, they are a pittance compared to the tax breaks and the investment credits and the fact that most of this stuff is done on public land, you know, the oil drilling and stuff.
Oh, right.
Contracts. So we are supporting the things that keep the gas prices low. Mm-hmm. And the USDA makes efforts to keep food costs low.
Right, with the subsidies. And, of course, most of those subsidies go to factory farms.
By quantity, yes.
By quantity, exactly.
But, you know, we got some subsidy Thursday, $100 or something, that was actually done by Wegmans that helped pay for our food safety training. So there are these small things that are happening. But there is an unbalanced effect on the smaller growers. When we decide that to take one of these certifications, or when we spend $10,000 a year on insurance, it's a lot harder for us to write that off than a large organization.
Yes.
What happens is we end up not paying ourselves. We pay our employees. We make sure the product gets going. But that's the social problem.
Mm-hmm.
How could you recommend to your kids to do that? Set up a business that you're going to work from midnight to 5 a.m., the only time you're going to have off, and you're going to work the rest of the time, and you're probably not going to be able to pay yourself, but you will grow good food.
Yeah, at least you'll eat good food. That we're listening to Your Health here on WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This is MC Blair. I'm speaking with Mike Clark and Leslie Jenkins of Planet Earth Diversified, and we've been talking about biodynamics. We covered the wonderful pestos and preserves they make, the fresh greens that they grow, and how all of this ginger and turmeric, is that turmeric? Yeah, I recognized it. And how all this food takes up the microbes in the soil that are good for you, the good microbes, and gives you a healthy body. It provides you this fuel, if you will, that's clean and clean burning fuel, you know, but biodynamically raised produce, and it's not fake food. It really isn't.
It really comes through in the aroma and the flavor.
Right.
Very flavorful.
Yes, I know. I've had your basil before and some of your other herbs, and it just blows me away, the difference in aroma and flavor, like you said.
Yeah. And I think that would be what you would give to your listeners if they're looking for a term, if they're looking some determination. Find a local farm that you can meet, and find a local farm that's feeding the soil.
There it is.
Actually growing the soil, and then the plants will take care of themselves, but they need to feed the soil.
That's right.
That is, never actually heard that term before, you know, or that, not term, but the way of thinking about it. I always said, well, you know, we got these wonderful kale plants or watercress, and that's going to feed me. And in fact, it is. But in fact, it feeds the soil right back, so that then anything else you plant there is going to, you know, have a nice uptake of those microbes and nutrients that we need. And I think you called that the biogenome, isn't that something like that? Yeah, exactly.
The terragenome, I guess.
Oh, terragenome, terra firma. That's what is it in the wine industry? One of the latest new buzzwords is the terroir. You know, the earth, and we used to call that earth, and earthy, got an earthy thing. Now they call it terroir, you know, so it's really interesting. Again, you're listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPVC, Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. And I am going to go into another segment here. I call it my 2-minute drill. It's the last segment of the day. And, you know, here on To Your Health, we inform you guys how to access healthy food, or real food, as I like to call it. I've always felt that if my family couldn't source properly grown local food, that buying organic would do. And I'm sure many of you feel the same way. Well, then I found out that since organic food is the fastest growing segment in the industry, big food companies are getting into the organic business. Well, it sounded like the free market is working, right? Wrong. Seems like the big boys are simply cheating and lying to us. The Cornucopia Institute took real photos of large dairy and beef farms that claimed to be organic. And that requires all those animals stay on green pasture from morning till evening. The photos taken over several weeks showed all the animals stayed confined in feedlots or barns in the case of dairy cattle. And this is a direct, in my opinion, slap in the face to consumers. So what are we going to do about it? I mean, I know you care about your family's well-being. We have enough to juggle between jobs and children's programs like soccer and football and other sports, or dance or other cultural interests, and many more important activities. Now we have to worry about fake organic products too? The lobbyists have gotten the rules for what organic is supposed to mean changed to accommodate their corporate partners. The little guy gets screwed and misled again. Big surprise. Well, we provide solutions here on To Your Health. The Cornucopia Institute has several lists of real organic products you can buy with confidence. So go to www.cornucopia.org to find out more. And also go to planetearthdiversified.com. I want to thank Mike and Leslie for coming here and being our guests. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
And next week, we've got the folks from Free Union Grass Farm and Gail Hobbs Page from Caremont Farm joining us. Thanks for listening. And remember, eating real food is the key to your health.
You've been listening to To Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.